Get ready for a retail sector masterclass with Pieter Engelbrecht, CEO of ShopRite. I was given the opportunity by ShopRite to dig into the latest earnings with Pieter, but also the strategy of the group, covering key concepts like retail inflation, the omnichannel strategy, and the power of having a corporate-owned rather than a franchise footprint. This podcast is sponsored by ShopRite for Ghostmail readers, but as always, I was allowed to ask whatever I want. Please note that this podcast is not an endorsement by me of ShopRite as an investment. Always do your own research, including reading through company reports and considering the share price alongside this management discussion. I do hope that you enjoy this kind of corporate access brought to you by Ghostmail. Welcome to this episode of the Ghost Stories podcast. Pretty big deal for me today. We are in earnings season and today I get to speak to a man who is responsible for the largest employer in South Africa. That is a pretty big responsibility when he wakes up in the morning. I sometimes feel scared that I have to write a newsletter to 40,000 people and not make any mistakes. That pales in comparison to what Pieter Engelbrecht is responsible for. So Pieter, thank you so much for doing this. You've released your interim results as ShopRite. I watched the presentation this morning. It's just amazing what you guys have built. So congratulations. And perhaps most of all, thank you for doing this podcast and bringing these insights to the Ghostmail audience.
Certainly. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
No, it's a great pleasure. And I'm really looking forward to honestly just getting all of these insights from you. There is so much to learn. So I did watch, of course, the results presentation this morning and congratulations. Well done. And certainly one of the key factors that came through is this very low inflation in South Africa, even price deflation, actually. And we'll speak about that just now. We will dig into that. I know it's a passion point for you. And as you correctly pointed out this morning, the regulators are making decisions around inflation and your numbers look quite different to the official numbers. So we will dig into that for sure. But before we get to that, I think just the question on everyone's lips really is around understanding the special sauce at ShopRite and not the sauce you'll find in the aisle, but the sauce that goes through the entire business. Because is it something they put in the water there in Brackenfell? I don't know what it is, but somehow you managed to just make it work. You know, there's been a bit of a slowdown, yes, in supermarkets RSA, but you are still running way ahead of your competitors. I mean, certainly my perception, and I won't ask you to comment on competitors, but mine is Woolworths is keeping you honest in Checkers right now, but Pick and Pay in disarray. Spar as a wholesaler, definitely landing in that same WhatsApp group. It's a tough environment for retail. We've seen a lot of pain in the apparel names as well. It's really difficult. And yet here you are, sales growth from continuing operations, 7.2%. What is in the water in Brackenfell? What is happening there? How are you doing this at ShopRite?
It's already a 10-year journey. It started 2017 when I became the CEO. One of the first things that I thought would make a difference is obviously our people. You mentioned the largest private employer, 170,000 people, and then we exclude all of the peripheral merchandisers and trolley collectors, cleaners, DC personnel, etc. So it's actually a much larger audience. And for me, the number one thing was that there must be mutual respect. So it was driven very hard in terms of behavior because retail is a tough business. And we're not always the most sophisticated people, but it doesn't mean you can be disrespectful. Hence, it was driven so hard. And, you know, I probably this past Christmas visit every year, December month, I try and visit as many stores as I can to get a feel for what's happening in the business. And maybe if we make some fundamental errors and I can pick it up and we can fix it. The attitude of the staff towards their customers and in general towards each other was for me amazing. I said to them in our first January meeting for the year, it was my best visits ever because of the people. And I say, I don't take leave. I just don't come into the office a couple of days. And in that time, people come up to me and they say to me, but what is happening there at ShopRite in Checkers? I say, no, what's happening? They say, no, the people are so amazing. There is almost this feeling of nothing is too much. We make a mistake. Manager gets in his car, bring you a hamper, apologizes. We try again. Try and learn from our mistakes. My executive assistant next to me is also responsible for the call center. So we scrutinize that all the time. If we make a mistake, we go all out to fix. And we've got this saying in ShopRite, meaning the group, that no customer leaves the store unhappy. And then we expanded that later on to say, the sun doesn't set on a customer complaint. I took that from the Xhosa word or sentence. It says, Zabenza kakul ilanga liachona, which directly translated is, you must work hard because the sun is drawing water. Almost saying that the sun is setting. And then I came up with this thing to say, the sun will not set on a customer complaint. And I think if you combine all of this in such a big workforce, and that is the general, I mean, there's always exceptions, but this is the general attitude of people. There's nothing that we won't do to please our customers, and we live by it. That's the best explanation I can give you.
So Peter, thanks. I think what you've spoken to directly there is the culture of the group, which makes sense, because when you've got 170,000 people trying to pull together in a particular direction, then there's no doubt that the culture has to work. That's the only way that it's going to actually come right. So maybe not something they put in the water at Brackenfell, but maybe an understanding that the water is going to get taken away by the sun, as you said. And so you need to make sure that you do all these things properly, which is very cool. Look, whatever the secret sauce is there, it's clearly hard to replicate, because otherwise your competitors would be doing so. And they aren't, because one of the stats in the set of numbers is, as per Nielsen, you are growing at 2.3 times the rest of the market, which is pretty incredible. So I think let's dig into some of the components of that. And I really want to make sure that we cover inflation properly. So let's do that now. It's a key factor in your business. And before we dig into internal selling price inflation versus official inflation, I just want to make sure for investors who maybe haven't worked in grocery retail or aren't that close to it, why is inflation such an important component of your sales growth as a retailer, as opposed to just volumes growth, for example? Why does inflation matter so much?
The simple answer would be that you may be growing volume, but the monetary value is not growing in line. So how are you going to cover your costs? Because the cost inflation is multiple times of your top line inflation, and that's the problem. So that's the short answer of why inflation is important to us. The second part of it is, of course, because we're so customer focused, we have to be focused also on how it affects their basket. So it's not all bad. For consumers, low inflation or deflation is fantastic. In December alone, 14,000 items were cheaper than last year. That's great for consumers, but we have a cost base to cover. And that's just when this whole discussion comes in. And then you did mention, I never speak about competitors. You mentioned one in the premium market. I mean, their internal inflation was over 7%. We went into deflation in December. And although for the 6 months, ShopRite Group outgrew the market 2.3 times, in December, it was 5.3. And in January, it was 4 times. And this has been a continuation over the last 6 years, month by month. So it's not a one-swallow story kind of thing. There is a consistency of improvement and execution. And I have to bring it back to the incredible people of ShopRite that can execute like nobody else. And, you know, years ago, we were criticized because we don't have a franchise model and why not? And most of the larger oppositions have got big franchise businesses. And then COVID happened. And after that, the KwaZulu-Natal unrest. And at that point, and I must say, including of 60-60, there was an old part of the same story, really, how the one flew into the next and the one happened after the other. But all of a sudden, at that point, we realized that our corporate model is actually to our advantage, because we've got real-time information, we've got real-time view on stock. And in crisis, we can sit here where I'm now sitting in this room. At that time, I mean, we had 4 a.m. meetings on unrest and that, and we'll make a decision. And 2 hours later, before the sun is up, 3,000 stores would have executed whatever we decided to do. The strength of that has become what we almost thought was our Achilles heel, actually became the strength of ShopRite. The fact that we can take a decision and an hour later I get 1,000 photos to show that it's executed. Still on the inflation, I mentioned one retailer who's not price sensitive, so they can add up their prices as much as they want. But we are a value retailer in the Checkers brand. It is still fantastic for me since last year that Checkers have become the number one brand in South Africa. I did say it in this morning's presentation that I know of no retailer globally where a food retailer has become, can I say, a loved brand. It's what we all dream about. I had wedding photos with a 60-60 theme.
I have many photos of my kids on their little delivery bike, I can tell you. Look, the Checkers man, I promise you. It is basically a cult. It's the cult of four-year-olds and apparently weddings.
Yeah, there's actually a long story that I could tell you around how I wanted to do one on an aeroplane, but then eventually aviation didn't give us approval to do it. They said people are not going to follow the protocol. So those were all naturally and just sent to me as a gesture. But coming back to the inflation thing, so firstly, we must say deflation. People think prices never come down. You know, that's a general perception. People say prices just never come down. They always go just up and up and up. But it's not true. I mean, there I mentioned 14,000 items lower than last year. Some of the categories where we over-index, like let's say potatoes, rice, maize, etc., up to minus 40, 50% deflation. So half the price of last year. So I think the South African consumer have benefited a lot by this. If you just now sit on the other side, and we are a public listed company where our shareholders demand performance and dividends and results, the cost base is a problem. Without now naming or shaming or anything, I live in Stellenbosch and my rates, taxes, water, whatever, that municipal bill of mine, have gone up by 35% this year. Now, I didn't get a 35% salary increase. So how are you going to pay for that? And I'm using it as example because everybody is in that boat. You now have to sacrifice something else because you didn't get that kind of increase that your cost inflation is. And so we can go through a lot of line items where the cost inflation is just not, the cost of living has increased exponentially in South Africa. That's why I say, if I think about my consumer, I'm very happy for them. And we're trying our best to give them better prices every day. That's why I say I know about no retailer in the world that sells a 1 rand item. That's 6 US cents for a packet of chocolate biscuits. There's 18 biscuits in that packet. And a packet of chips for 1 rand and making a kid happy. That is what we do. But in the end, now we have to try and balance the whole income statement. And that's why we were also criticized for that for some time about the high amount, or maybe it sounds high, but in context, the amount of capex that we spend every year. So for 3 years now, even more maybe, we've been spending 8 billion a year on systems, tech, AI, you name it. I said 5 years ago, if you're not going to make those investments to have a tool and have artificial intelligence and all these things helping you to make the best possible decisions based on your data set. And there we are very fortunate. I mean, we've got 34 million customers, extra savings customers, and we have over 90% swipe rate. So over 90% of people, when they shop, swipe their card so we can see what they're buying, if they're in distress, if they're down buying, if they're moving categories, something that comes up new, people buying into a new category. So there's a trend change. That's why I made the statement to say the young people, the Gen Zs, they think differently about pets and children and how their lives must be, and much healthier, I think, than what we are, or me. I look at my son, I mean, they are very health conscious in terms of what they eat. These days, you have to be very alert on what's on the product list. People want to know, is there added sugar? What's the protein content? What's the fat? These are all things that the data and all of these system investments and things that we've done is helping us, I think, to give a customer a better experience. And if you then add to that, staff that has a proper customer service inclination, attitude, it makes a strong combination. And I think that's probably sort of the gist of what has happened in the entire market. Retail in South Africa is at a crossroad, I think. We can see it in the results. Food retail in particular, you know, I've spoken about the franchise model. We know about the court cases going on and the fights here and there, but I could see that over time, the pressure on the gross margin was incredible on the franchisees, and a lot of them are not making money anymore. The ones that are doing well are those that own also the property that they can then cross-subsidize yourself. But in general, if I am a one or two store owner, where do I go? How do I monetize this investment? I've been now, and you know, retail franchise started, let's say, roughly about 30 years or 35 years ago. A lot of good retailers left the corporates and opened a franchise, and they built up a fantastic business. Worked hard, but could build a good life. Now they're at, let's say, retirement age, and they want to monetize the investment. How? I mean, you're talking millions here. I mean, a store these days doesn't cost $1 or $2 million to build and stock and equipment and aircon and generators and you name it. And the only probable buyer is ShopRite. But we can't, because we will not be allowed to because of ComCom and all of these things. And maybe while I'm saying that to you, I also want to say, I mean, competition will always be there. I don't think there should be a fear that ShopRite is going to own 100% of the market. I don't think there is a possibility. It cannot happen. But even if it had to happen, the one thing I can assure you is that ShopRite will never abuse that position. Our customers and the value that we give them is not changing. That's why I get this question quite a lot. And people ask me because, I mean, we've got, of all FMCG retailers in South Africa, food retailers, we've got the highest gross profit margin. Not because we've got the highest prices. That you know. Anybody can see what our prices are. You can compare it every day. It's because of efficiencies and the way that we think about how and what we give our consumers. So having said that, we running that kind of margin, people ask me this thing always, but can it go higher? And then my standard answer is, I would not like to. I think if we can maintain through thick and thin, difficult, good circumstances, economic growth, not economic growth, if we can maintain our margin, and especially our trading profit margin of around 6%, that's good. And that's what we will honor. And then we know we're also giving the best value to our consumers. So I, even in a scenario where, let's say, the market share of ShopRite grows more, there will never be a situation that we will profiteer or not look after the customer's interest in the first instance.
So much good stuff in there. I could listen to you talk about retail literally all day. There's a lot of really interesting stuff. And I mean, you raised a lot of points there. You talked about the costs that you face and how important inflationary increases are for that. And, you know, municipal rates, just one example, it's energy costs, it's security, it's all that kind of stuff makes it really difficult. And I think I've used the analogy before that it feels like in grocery retail, it's the big snake, it's the python squeezing the impala. You are the python, in case that's not incredibly obvious to someone listening to this. There are a few impalas. And I think what those impalas all have in common is exactly the point you've raised, which is they are franchise businesses. I've written a lot about that. And I totally understand that point is to be able to do what you do, including stuff like omnichannel, 60-60, you need to know where the stock is, where it's actually sitting so that you can fulfill. And, you know, again, I'm okay to talk about your competitors, but I remember when Woolworths went and bought up their franchisees all those years ago, that's why they can still compete with you. Feels like everyone else who's trying to actually make this work with a franchise network is really, really struggling. And it's just fascinating how everything has gone in this direction. It's such an interesting industry. But I definitely want to make sure that we just finish off on the inflation point with that slide you had, which I know is important to you, and I found it very interesting, around how you measure food inflation versus the, let's call it, official food inflation, the basket that decisions are made on. I cannot believe how high our interest rates are in South Africa right now versus what I see on the ground. And I'm guessing you probably share that view, at least to some extent. So I'd like you to speak about that, and maybe someone at the SARB is listening.
I definitely share your sentiment. I mean, we're so desperate for economic growth in this country. We know that it will change everything. I mean, we can't continue just paying more grants and more grants while we actually pay it with debt. I mean, it's not like it's money we generate. We borrow that money. and it comes at the interest rate. So it does bother me that for quite a while now, we have such a big discrepancy between the official food inflation and what we calculate. And not only us, I want to refer also to my peers. There's so much data available. It's not that I want to poke in somebody's eye and say, listen, you're doing something wrong. I'm just questioning that how can we like 5% be different? And all the retailers have the same number except one. So now we are sitting at, you know, lending rate is now 10.2%. We cannot sit in a scenario where we say we're at 10.2% because we've got a target to reduce inflation. And we say food inflation is 4.7, yet the retailers come and say, but we are actually in deflation. Not only us. I mean, we can ask all the manufacturers. I refer to them as brand owners, all the big ones in South Africa. There are many. Will tell you the same story. And they've got the same data. So it's not as if we're short on data to be able to be as accurate as we possibly can to then help making the best monetary policy decisions. That's actually the big point that I was trying to make. And then the difference in calculation, to put it very simplistic, is the current official CPI on food is a static basket of about 450 items. And that was a basket when we were at the height of load shedding on it. So that basket looks quite different to what the basket looked like today. And we take, like, in December, when we calculate our, every month we calculate our internal inflation, both cost and selling, and we measure 56,000 items that was bought in December, and we then take into account combination buys, multi-buys, promotional items, and then say, okay, what was the price of these 56 items last year, December? And that's our official inflation. And for me, that is the truest reflection of what the real consumer inflation is, what I experience. Because this is, I made some choices. I changed brands. I am buying more multi-buys, or I'm using my extra savings card. Yeah, you change your shopping behavior. Maybe you change even your diet. And I've got different needs to what I had when the market and the macro environment was completely different. That was the point that I just tried to make. It does concern me a little bit, maybe it's an understatement, but that we're not getting the economy to kickstart. And I said this morning, there's a lot of things that I am seeing can assist. And then I said also, but hope is not a strategy. So I can't live in hope that all the money that government secured from the countries and donors and whatever, that is going to be invested in infrastructure, because that will definitely create jobs, will kickstart the economy. We need the interest rates to come down. We cannot run it over 10% interest rate if our inflation is actually not 5, but actually 1 or 0.5. And that was just as simplistic as I can explain to you what is in my thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree with you about the state of play out there. You can certainly see it better than anyone in the stats you have. I think if you just look at how South Africans are spending on areas like online gambling, what is that at the end of the day? It's the sale of hope. You say hope is not a strategy, but when you are struggling and we don't have economic growth and we're not creating jobs, then you will try find that hope where you can. And a lot of people believe that they can online bet and online gamble their way out of it, because that's what the adverts are implying. It's very sad. And a lot of it would get better if we could just be a little bit less strict with interest rates. So maybe someone somewhere is listening, I suppose. There I am willing to live in hope. But maybe let's move on from inflation then and monetary policy into the stuff you can control. Omnichannel, certainly top of that list. Now, I recently reviewed Walmart's results, and Omnichannel has been a huge part of their story. And they've been telling the market about how profitable it is. It's efficient fulfillment. It's having the data. It's the advertising layer that comes with it. It's great to see that overseas. Now, I see a lot of parallels with your business, and I know that you're maybe not at the point where you're talking about it as much as, say, Walmart is. I picked that up in this morning's presentation, certainly. But I guess it's this overlay, right? It's e-commerce, it's AI, it's logistics efficiencies. It's the way that you can run this business at this incredible gross margin. but without having high prices. All of this adds up into having, in my opinion, just the perfect machine for omnichannel. Like, I look at what Walmart's built and I look at you and I can see some really good similarities around how you're actually building this thing out. So 60/60 feels like it's actually early days in this journey. I mean, I just see it as a fulfillment engine across everything you're building, even if it maybe started out as, you know, get your stuff from Checkers. Is that a fair, to the extent you can talk about it and comment on that? Am I thinking about it the right way?
Yeah, no, you're spot on. But maybe just before I go into the omnichannel, something on the gambling thing, because I had actually a different view to one of my competitor CEOs. And I then, on Christmas Day, actually, I acknowledged to him that he was right. Because one of the banks shared with us some information on Black Friday. Now, on Black Friday, that is an enormous day for ShopRite. And you know, I've said in the presentation that we've done exceptionally well. So let me just say, on such a day, we do well north of R1 billion. And one of the banks, only one, said to me that on that day, they equaled ShopRite's turnover in online gambling vouchers. Now, that blew my mind. I didn't expect that. If we're now on top of the inflation or deflation, you sit that, call it R1 billion or whatever, should have gone to food or food-related product, most probably, for a large portion of it. And it's now gone into a black hole. So it is something that needs attention. I was asked what I'm going to do about it. I said, there's nothing I can do. I'm not the regulator. It's not our job. There's people that understand that stuff much better than us. I just wanted to give you that tidbit of info. Back on the omnichannel, so we also made mistakes. Not everything we do works and is perfect. We just have this policy of fail fast. So when we started with the idea of online, you will remember that our competitors have been on online for much longer than us. I mean, 20 years ago. But I never liked the concept of a web-based buying platform for food. And here's what how I can explain it to you the easiest is, so now you log in, you're now into Checkers, then you go where? You want to buy milk. Okay, now you go refrigerated or chilled product. Okay, next click, you go milk. Next click, there are 14 brands. So which brand are you going to buy? Then next click is what size? 500 ml, 1 liter, 2 liter, 3 liter. Then we go, is it low fat, 2%, full cream, skimmed? Okay, now I say, okay, finally. 9 clicks later, I have a milk in my basket. That chemist never work.
It sounds like more work than going to the store.
Yeah. So that's, but we started out also with what the world have been doing, Ocado and them, and had 3 distribution centers in the country where we, fulfillment centers for pet and liquor. We tried those 2. But we failed dismally, I mean, very quickly. It's just not a sustainable model in South Africa. Long distances that you have to travel, the cost of traveling, now and then the stock availability. So now somebody orders from you a bottle of wine, let's say, in Johannesburg, but now you don't have stock of that in that fulfillment center. Now that bottle of wine has to come from Cape Town all the way to Joburg. It just can't work. And then COVID happened, and we had this thing to say, but it needs to be app-driven. We already then had invested in the systems. We had a real-time view of stock, and we said, maybe, you know, what we thought, and I mentioned this earlier, what we thought was our Achilles heel is our wide spread of stores. And then all of a sudden became a benefit, because we then realized if we can pick from store, we like within 90% of our addressable market in terms of our store location to fulfill from. My only request at the time was that it's mission-driven. That's how we started. We started with like 500 products. It was mission-driven in the sense of, you want to do a braai, and then we have maybe 10 items, or you want to do breakfast. And that's how we started. And that's how it evolved. And now it's become really a true omni-channel. We've got the pet on there. We're loading all of the rest of the business is all going to come onto that super app. You will be able to navigate absolutely seamlessly through groceries, milk that I just said, to outdoor, to pet, to your pharmacy, or your vitamins. So that is what we're building. And then, of course, on top of that, there's the drive on financial services and then also pharmacare, because we saw from the data that there's a tendency of customers, like previously when we were big in clothing, we learned the same thing, that at some point, without explanation or something triggering it, customers started to not buy clothing at the hypermarkets. It felt almost like people didn't want to buy a shirt that you're going to wear to work and then throw that in a trolley with your milk and your chicken. And that's how the apparel stores then started to expand, and we saw a lot of retailers going into clothing. And now we see a similar trend in personal care and health and beauty. And almost like people feel, I get the impression that something I'm going to put on my face doesn't belong next to the chicken in my shopping trolley. Hence why we have this target to increase our pharma footprint. We've got Transpharm, the wholesaler, and we've got 140 pharmacy licenses. We are already in the game. It's now just we're starting to take them out of the stores into specialized, separate, standalone stores. And they are performing very well. It's now a question of time, because what is the best location that any retailer would want is to be close to ShopRite or Checkers front door, because they do all the hard work to pull the people there. And then you just fish off that if you close by. And so those are very sought after premises. So it will take us time to actually get those sites for our own pharma care ambition. And then the other part is the financial services. I said that at the end of last year that we've replatformed the system. And in the meantime, we have launched a very low-key, a money market account that is free of charge within our environment. There's only a charge to withdraw money, 5 rand fixed fee. If you compare that to an ATM charge, a big difference. Because we expect you to go spend that money somewhere else. And there's a lot of things happening in the financial services world. And I almost want to reverse a step. We spoke about the economy and that the economy has to drive and grow. And I think because the economy has been shrinking, we are now all meddling in each other's businesses. The telecom guys are into insurance and micro advances, and the retailers are going into banking. And so we're all, you know, in each other's businesses, because we are all looking to grow. And how do we do that if the economy is not growing? So I think that is what's been happening in the environment. And we're very lucky that in the last 10 years or so, that 8 years, we generated a lot of cash, that we were able to spend 3% of revenue on CapEx and invest in the systems, the supply chain. That has opened a lot of doors for us. It's a busy place here in Brackenfell, I can tell you. We have to run here. But I think that is what's been happening, and we're in a very fortunate position that we could pre-invest to enable us now to be in these markets. And there's a lot of negotiations and talks and things going on. So, and as usual, we will tell you as and when we conclude, not before. We like to deliver and then we tell you, instead of promising you what we're going
to
do.
I actually wrote on X earlier that I'm grateful to wake up in the morning and not run a business that competes with ShopRite. Although now I'm slightly scared you might get into financial media as well based on that, because it sounds like nothing's safe. But jokes aside, you're right. Everyone is kind of in everyone else's economic profit pool, and it's a function of growth. My thesis is distribution and brand wins. If people can find you and they trust you, they will buy different things from you. We know that's how South Africans behave. So very interesting what you're building there. Peter, conscious of time, this is really pretty much the end of my slot with you. This has been such a cool discussion. I guess just last thing, and really just 2 minutes, an elevator pitch of why should someone invest in ShopRite? And I think just to couch that specifically for the long term, because I think this really is the type of investment that you buy and forget. There are not many of them, and this is one of them. So the 2-minute elevator pitch, why should an investor feel really good about their money being in ShopRite?
I hope I'm not going to go over the time limit you've given me, but I want to start with a story that I visited an investor, a very, very large fund in Boston in America. And I met the CEO. They gave us some sandwiches for lunch, and he came in and he said to me, "Hello, Peter, let me just explain to you where you fit in my world. We are over $1 trillion fund." Okay, I can't even count to there. They say, I think it will take you 36 years if you had to count to a trillion, if you count every second, 36 years. So I don't have 36 left. So anyway, he says to me, out of this $1 trillion, 3% of our portfolio is in EMEA, you know, Middle East, Africa. And in there is South Africa. And in South Africa is ShopRite. So you actually nothing in my life. I said, thank you for the lunch. I really appreciate it. It's all good. I'll go back home now. He said, no. I'll tell you one thing. The only share that I own in South Africa is ShopRite. I said to him, why? Have you been to South Africa? He says, no, but I can read. Okay. He says, I'll tell you. And that's where that saying of mine has come from. It's actually that man who said to me, for him, ShopRite is not a retailer that sells stuff. It's the institution. And that is the message that I actually want to give. ShopRite is not a cheap share. It's like Warren Buffett said, I mean, you buy a good share and you're going to pay for it. If you want to speculate the market, then ShopRite is probably not your share to buy. But what is it that ShopRite offers? Stability, consistency, the brand equity by itself. It's not for nothing the number one brand in South Africa. And afterwards, I asked myself, I said, Peter, can you imagine South Africa without ShopRite? Think about the suppliers, the farmers, the whole value chain. It's not possible. And that's why I say ShopRite is a good investment.
I think that gets the message across pretty well. And it's not my time limit. I could speak to you all day, but there are members of your team there who will come and hit me on the head if I use more than my slot, because you are a man in demand. Everyone wants to speak to you today, and understandably so. So we are going to have to leave it there. Peter, from my side and to the team on that side, just a big congrats. It's really fun to write about ShopRite. I get a big kick from it strategically. I get to see lots of similarities to what other retailers are doing overseas, like the best in the world kind of retailers. So well done. Congrats. Hope this will only be our first podcast rather than our last podcast, because I've really enjoyed it and you've got so much to share. And all the best for the rest of the discussions today, and certainly for the trading conditions that you're in at the moment. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And I thank you very much also for your time. We appreciate it.